The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
Football Weekly, and today it's a bumper show. Leicester, as Premier League turns into a fox hunt, we salute Ranieri's side and say it's a good thing the Faroe Islands don't play in the Premier League. There's love for Spurs too, a 4-1 win over Hammers, but can they do it on a mild Thursday night in Carabao? Love that meme. And there's shock and awe at Liverpool's demolition of Man City, a Kloppalypse now at the Etihad, and all that sort of stuff. We've got Champions League previews, the Clasico as Real Madrid lose, and there's whistles and boos. We've got Italian news, some of your views, and an update on the minor disturbances they've been having at FIFA too, in this Football Weekly. Yes, hello everyone, and may I say what a great pleasure it is to be here with such a top set of games to discuss and such a top set of people to do it with as well. We've got Jacob Steinberg in.
Hello.
Still reeling from that scoreline Sunday afternoon at White Hart Lane. Owen Gibson.
Hello there.
So still reeling from the latest shock developments at FIFA.
Indeed. Constantly reeling.
And Chelsea winning again
as well.
And John Ashton still reeling because you're on, what, beer 500 and...
Yeah, reeling about the place.
Right, indeed. Good to see you all looking so well. Not quite as good as Leicester are looking, though, as, by way of introduction to topic one, which is Leicester. What an extraordinary arc, trajectory, if you like. Bottom of the table this time last year, now they are top.
Absolutely. And I think Martin O'Neill was saying at the weekend, wasn't he, if you took the back end of last season and added to the front end of this season, you'd be looking at a very impressive run of form. Right. I mean, I think you know, Leicester top, Chelsea 50, that's pretty much what we all expected to be happen by this point.
More or less. Yeah. Although, but, you know, the Grinches out there are saying, but who have they played? Which big teams have Leicester played so far? Only Arsenal, I think, and, you know, they were at the wrong end of a big scoreline that day. Also, Jonathan Wilson, very much in Grinch mode, as he says, I've only checked quickly, but I think the last time the leaders had as fewer points as this, that's just 28, was Aston Villa in 98-99.
They finished around sixth.
Did they?
Yeah, sixth, seventh. Leicester play Manchester United on Saturday, so it's a top-of-the-table clash.
Wow.
The last time that happened, I looked this up, was 2000-2001, and United went to Leicester early on in the season and absolutely thumped them.
Right, the last time they met as top of the table
Leicester were
contenders.
Top, Manchester United were second, Manchester United ended the day in first place.
Right, that's interesting. So, yeah. Do you think the likelihood is of a similar... This is at the King Power Stadium, is it?
Yeah, at the KP, yeah.
Right, where of course Leicester handed Man United a very, very significant defeat last season, didn't they?
Yeah, 5-3. Mm. They're just a relentless side who just keep going, and they're good on the counter-attacks. They've got Albrighton and Mahrez, who could easily end up being the player of the season. He's a fantastic player. Was at the end of last season, he's carried it on this season. And then you've got Jamie Vardy, who will not stop scoring. And even that moment where he, in the second half, where you saw him ignore Mahrez and not pass to him, he's just so single-minded at the moment that he just believes that he can keep doing it all the time. And people keep, a little bit like Harry Kane last season, keep expecting him to stop and they keep doubting him, but he keeps doing it. And he's now equaled that record, and it'd be amazing if he could go and break it against Manchester United, given that it was Ruud van Nistelrooy who had the record.
Right. It's what he does. It's all he does. And he absolutely will not stop, ever. It's just a line from a film, that. Yeah. Well, that's now, what, 10 games in a row. But is it a record? Because, of course, before the Premier League came into existence, other players were doing this, scoring in consecutive games. Am I right in saying that the real record for the Football League is Stan Mortensen with 16 games?
I've seen various versions of this, but yeah, I think that's right.
Something like that.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of my bugbears too, the idea that football didn't exist before the Premier League. But no, full credit to
So you say,
Jamie
but is there evidence of that? No. Sorry, that's a big facetious
number. Then you had Ranieri pointing out that he had Batistuta.
Yes.
Who scored 11.
Well, he was asked if he'd ever had a similar run, and yeah.
I mean,
goal.
That's the other thing, isn't it, about what Ranieri's done. He's basically, the man known as the Tinker Man has been just remarkably consistent in basically leaving in place what was a system that was working very well at the end of last season, and he's made just the right amount of fine-tuning to carry it on at the beginning of this. And, you know, I don't think anyone's doubting they probably have a a bad spell at some point and fall off a bit, but it's been remarkable.
There have been a couple of games, actually, where I've seen Leicester a couple of times and he's actually got it wrong from the start and has changed it at half-time. The Leicester game where he played Vardy on his own up front, he played five midfield with Mahrez behind Vardy, it didn't work. He immediately changed it at half-time and brought on a second striker and they ended up scoring two goals in the first bit of the second half. The Bournemouth away game that happened, and even the West Ham away game where they were 2-0 up at half-time and then really under the cosh for the start of the second half, and he made defensive alterations that just kind of killed the game. So he gets a lot of stick for the tinkering at times, but it has worked actually for them at times this season.
Be interesting to see what the club does in the January transfer window as well, whether they decide to maybe seize this moment and try and push for something. Well, what about Newcastle? What about their prospects? People were talking about a lack of effort in this match. Is it that, or is it just the defensive midfielder injury run has cost them their steel in midfield, or what's the issue there?
Yeah, well, they were abject, weren't they? I think in part it is just a lack of quality throughout the team, and you know you can see I think they will struggle to stay up, but I mean it's going to be a bottom third kind of finish for them. Whatever happens, really. Mm.
And it's not like they didn't spend any money during the summer; they just didn't spend the money either A on the wrong players and B on players that weren't selected by the manager, I think. And you know they. There was a period about sort of 2 or 3 weeks ago when everyone was starting to say, oh, well, you know, they're starting to pull it together. Maybe they're not getting quite the results they deserve for the performances. And on the weekend, it just it was the opposite. The performance was just completely abject and they looked all over the place.
Indeed. All right, well, let's talk now while Jamie Vardy races clear in the scoring charts at the figure who's kind of rumbling up behind him, extraordinary Harry Kane. Does that make it 7 goals in 4 matches?
I think he's got 8 in 7 or something like that.
8 in 7,
yeah,
is it? I think,
well, a few of them are against Bournemouth and Artur Boric, but still.
Right.
Yeah.
They all count, though. And 2 of them were against West Ham in a 4-1 win, Jacob.
Yep.
Any thoughts? Well, going to be tough without Payet?
It's going to be very tough for West Ham without Payet, but I think at the same time, Spurs have the form since the start of the season has been incredible. And given how open this league is, I am almost starting to wonder if they actually could win the title.
Win the title?
Well, you look at Arsenal.
They'd have to finish above Arsenal to do that.
They'd have to finish above Arsenal, which they haven't done for years and years. But Manchester United, they have their goal-scoring problems, and City have their problems with attitude and consistency at times. Chelsea have left a gap for someone to fill. They haven't lost since the first day of the season. That was only an own goal by Kyle Walker in a game that was very even against United. They've beaten City 4-1. That was very impressive against a team that has been very good away from home yesterday. Pochettino's doing a magnificent job, and he's got all the players on side. I think probably where they would fall down would be that they don't have much cover for Kane.
And also, you know, just this, in very simplistic terms, the idea they might end up knackered by playing this, you know, very
Europa League. Because they're in the Europa League.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. And this kind of, you know, this pressing game they play, which does involve expending a lot of energy. But no, I mean, they looked absolutely fantastic.
Well, they've got to go to Azerbaijan this Thursday.
Indeed, barely in Europe.
Barely in Europe.
Well, they play Chelsea on Sunday afternoon, so you would expect them to play a weakened side against
Carabag
on Thursday evening. Mm. But if you compare the state they were in when he took over and some of the attitude that some of those players had, he gave some of them a chance to show what they could do. Likes of Lennon, Adebayor, Paulinho had one look at them, no thanks, and he's got in these young players now who just are playing this vibrant football, which is great to watch as well, and really stops the team playing. Defence is good with Vertonghen and Alderweireld as well.
Yeah. Disconcertingly, they're no longer Spursy.
They're not very Spursy.
They're not very Spursy, no.
And yeah, I mean,
and Salmon's a great signing as well, wasn't he? I mean, he's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looked fantastic.
There's probably more to come from Lamella and Eriksen as well.
There was a lot of love for Liverpool's pressing game on Saturday at Man City, but Spurs equally were asphyxiating against West Ham, I thought.
Yeah. Pochettino said that their styles are very different between him and Klopp. He was asked about it recently, and he said he sort of reacted with surprise when he was asked whether there were any similarities between his pressing and Klopp's pressing. But yeah, I mean they just overwhelmed them. And for West Ham, the fact that they had Andy Carroll up front, not really able to move, made a big difference. It meant they weren't able to get out. If you compare him and the speed and movement of Kane, the way that Kane runs the channels and hassles defenders all the time. It was,
I mean, what's that? There were obviously different performances, weren't they? Because one was away from home, was much more counter-attacking, and Spurs, whereas Spurs just swarmed at every opportunity to swarm forward. But yeah, I mean, the success of both teams lay in the fact that they didn't let either opponent settle on the ball and just, you know, they're on it all the time, weren't they?
They certainly were. Let's talk about Liverpool then. 4-1 at the Etihad. Did you see this one coming, John?
No, I didn't see it coming. Mm. Although I suppose you could, if you could have, you know, in hindsight, if you look back at Man City's capitulation at Spurs, there were sort of similarities there where once they were behind and struggling, the sort of defensive midfield disappeared. And I know the back four got a lot of stick with Mangala not having a particularly good game, but I thought they were completely exposed by just the absence of that sort of shield in front of them. And so whenever Liverpool did win the ball high up, you know, they were free to break onto the back four.
Right. It's something like 8 or 9 games. I think this is maybe the 8th game that Klopp's been at Liverpool, and we can draw some conclusions now. He's had a massive impact on the way this team plays and the way the players show up as well. I mean, Coutinho's work rate at the weekend was extraordinary.
Coutinho and Firmino, both of them, and have worked extremely hard. He obviously left Benteke on the bench, made a big call there. And, you know, you're right. I mean, the amount of effort, the sheer amount of effort they're putting in is kind of tangible. And there were people who were saying after week one or week two, oh, I bet he's regretting this now. Klopp, you know, has he jumped in too soon? Should he have held on? You know, it's starting to look like a pretty good fit to me.
You're tipping Spurs as maybe even top spot, but certainly top four contenders. And there is at least one vacancy there from the usual suspects in the Champions League positions. Who's the likelier top four candidate, Spurs or Liverpool?
I would say Spurs on current
really?
Form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
But I think there's no reason why they can't both be in the mix, as they say, going into the final few weeks. So I think you'd expect both to be up there, bobbing around the top six, definitely.
Remember, Liverpool lost their previous game.
Oh, yeah, that's
Palace at home.
Yeah.
So he's still got work to do. But I thought this was better than the Chelsea performance.
That's Klopp's point as well. He said, now win like this at Anfield. Ha! That's what he said to his players. And that's very much the test. But this will be a massive boost to them. They, of course, also have Europa League action on Thursday. They're going to be, I believe, at home to Bordeaux. I believe they're at home to Bordeaux. Interesting to see how he approaches that. For City, how much of a massive red light flashing away on the dashboard was this for Pellegrini?
Well, it was a bit strange the way he sort of explained it away as a fake result. Like, no, it wasn't
on
a fake
basis?
Result. You were absolutely taken to pieces. Hmm. And it is, there are worrying echoes of other sort of capitulations.
They all supposedly got together on Sunday morning and had a proper... They thrashed out their issues together, as Sanya, I think, said about the City players. And it is true that when they did lose 4-1 at Spurs earlier in the season, they then went on a run. I think they won seven in a row.
Yeah, that is true.
So they do bounce back from these things.
And there are specific issues. You know, company will come back and, you know, they'll be fine. You know, they'll certainly be up there and challenging. But it was quite worrying how brittle they were.
Absolutely.
Demichelis played in the 4-1 at Spurs and he played in the 4-1 on Saturday.
Coincidence?
I don't think so.
All right. You mentioned the squad size being potentially a limiting issue for Spurs' ambitions this season. How's Liverpool's squad looked to you?
Well, they had Benteke and Sturridge on the bench, so suggests they had options to bring on to change
Jordan
the game.
Henderson as well.
To come back. Yeah, I mean, you know, it starts to look a bit more rosy for them, I think.
Yeah. Right. City's bench was not much to speak about on Saturday.
Well, what a fantastically entertaining game that was anyway on Saturday. Man City with their chance to bounce back coming up this midweek, of course, when they're going to be over in Turin taking on Juventus. Borussia Mönchengladbach up against Sevilla in the same group. This is on Wednesday. City already through, but they don't want to finish second in the groups. Juventus just need a point. Any thoughts on that game, Jacob?
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how they bounce back, whether company will be there. Aguero obviously scored a fantastic goal, but didn't look very fit.
Right, it was a good goal, wasn't it?
Obviously just back from injury. They lost the game to Juve earlier in the season. Their European form has been a bit strange because they could have been hammered in each game and yet they've come out with 9 points because they've been able to score goals.
Right.
Juventus haven't been too good this season, have they?
Well, they no, got but they're on the way back now.
They got
actually
their win on Saturday.
They did get the win, and they're climbing back up the table. In unspectacular form, mostly, but Dybala scored a brilliant goal at the weekend in that 1-0 win over Milan, and they do have an extraordinarily good record at home in Europe, so that's by no means a gimme, that game.
No, but as you say, you know, finishing top is obviously crucial, you know, kind of it. We've seen so many times, haven't we, when, you know, teams have qualified, then relaxed slightly, finished second, and then got a really difficult draw in the round of 16. So it'll be, I imagine Pellegrini will be really sort of asking his players to prove that they mean what they said in that dressing room on Sunday and, you know, come roaring back.
Indeed. All right, well, we're going to talk more Premier League and Champions League after this. John Ashton, Arsenal. This is unexpected territory with the Gunners, isn't it? Collapse at West Brom, and oh my goodness, they've had loads of injuries in midfield.
Who would have thought it?
Who would have thought it? Wow. So you've got Ramsey and Wilshere and Walcott and Oxlade-Chamberlain out, and then Coquelin, perhaps most crucially of all, gets knacked. And then Arteta comes on, scores an own goal, and then gets knacked himself.
Yeah.
This is peak Arsenal.
It is, absolutely peak Arsenal, yeah. And it's weird, really, because they have been, you know, this season it's been built, or their sort of success so far has been built on a pretty strong defence. And to, you know, it's no coincidence that, you know, Coquelin goes off and all of a sudden they look flaky and concede two pretty soft goals and lose the game. Because they haven't been all that prolific in front of goal, really. And, you know, they might need to change it up a little bit if they're going to start conceding that way.
It's almost like Wenger has to leave one area in which he can, you know, allow fans to carry on saying, oh, we told you so, you know, kind of sort out the goalkeeping issue, and so finally, and yet now, you know, they've sort of got absolutely no cover whatsoever in sort of defensive midfield, where Coquelin's been, you know, a revelation this season, hasn't he? And, you know, they will absolutely miss him.
Any word on how long he's going to be out for?
Could be a while.
A while, okay. It's not going to cost them too much in terms of their current league position, because Man City's defeat, they are only 2 points indeed behind Leicester there, currently in fourth spot, the Gunners. As regards to their Champions League ambitions, which are already severely compromised by their results so far, well, they're third, of course, in the group. They are 6 points behind the leaders Bayern Munich and Olympiacos, for that matter. And, well, it's going to be... It's going to be an interesting game as they host Dinamo Zagreb, who've lost 5 games in all competitions since they beat Arsenal, when you remember they were unbeaten in ages, and they've had a player basically suspended because of doping as well. But even if they win this game, still a long shot for them to get out of this group. And it's a difficult balance because you're trying to get out of the group, but you're trying not to get out of this group into the Europa League, I imagine.
Exactly, although I suppose you could now argue that, you know, if they were to fall out of contention for the Champions League and the league, then winning the Europa League might be your only route back into the Champions League next season. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you'd probably want to finish second or fourth and not third, wouldn't you?
Right. How much do you think their chances in the league are compromised by the injuries there, Coquelin?
Well, I think they are, absolutely. I mean, but although, you know, we can't be too short-termist about this. It is one bad result. They have been pretty good this season. But you would think that's a fairly important cog in their machine to take out. And with all those other injuries that you mentioned, it's going to be a difficult period for them. They always have one of these periods during the season. Arsenal, you know, they've started fantastically strongly. We're all thinking maybe this will be the year when they do mount a serious title challenge. Now we're into the period where they have some injury concerns and you worry about the wheels falling off.
Yeah, all teams do, don't they? All teams get loads of injuries. And
I think they do. It's something about Wenger being having there for so long, isn't there, in a way that kind of everyone, Arsenal fans and non-Arsenal fans, fall into this narrative of, oh, you know, this is a familiar failing, or what did he do last time, which doesn't happen with other teams because the tenure is not so great.
Right, and also the fact that they largely are better prepared for eventual injuries to key people in their squad.
There's also that, yeah.
Well, as you say, we don't want to be too short-termist about that. In the meantime, in their group, Bayern Munich taking on Olympiacos, who they beat 3-0 away in Greece earlier on in the season. Of course, if those two teams draw, they would both go through and end Arsenal's chances in the process. You're shaking your head.
Well, they're not going to draw, are they?
Well, they might not do. Although Bayern do have a history of taking their foot off the gas a little bit in in the later stages of the group stage. But they are in scary form. They racked up another win this weekend, 3-1 away at Schalke, Jacob.
Yeah, it was quite difficult, and the goals were late, weren't they? For Bayern, two late goals.
I only saw the highlights, so I have no idea at what stage the goals happened.
Yeah, they were late goals in the last 20 minutes.
But they're running away with it again, are they, basically?
Yeah.
They are 8 points clear because Borussia Dortmund lost this weekend. Not quite as big a margin as PSG's. They're 13 points clear at the top of Liga, and yes, we are still in November. I did want to mention a big Bayern Munich stat, which we were wheeling out Sunday night. If Bayern had conceded every single one of the shots on target that they faced this season, if all of those shots on target had gone in, do you know where they'd be in the league? still top. So, effectively, they could have played the entire season without a goalkeeper so far, and they'd still be top of the league. That's how good they are.
Manuel Neuer is completely pointless for them, basically.
Yep. Amazing.
What's that Italian phrase, Jimbo, for teams arranging to draw because it suits them?
Oh, biscotto.
That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah, this would be a biscotto. Yeah. All right. Anyway, so the crucial midweek this for Arsenal. Also for Man United. What a delicate fixture they will have against PSV Eindhoven, who they were defeated by in Holland or in the Netherlands earlier this season, of the game which cost them Luke Shaw as well. And anyone can still qualify for that group. Man United at the moment just 1 point ahead of PSV and Wolfsburg, who are going to be away in CSKA Moscow. So I'm thinking that's going to be a very cold game. I don't know exactly how many degrees we're looking at, but
we can guarantee it'll be pretty cold.
Good news for United fans that ahead of this crucial fixture, they're looking exciting again.
Well,
you were at this game, Jacob.
Yeah. Well, the bad news would be that they lost Ander Herrera, who was responsible for a lot of the excitement in the first half. Yes, to a hamstring injury.
Ooh.
And Phil Jones limped off with a twisted ankle, unsurprisingly, which is a shame because Smalling and Jones is potentially a very, very good partnership at the back. But he just can't stay fit. Whereas, again, Smalling was magnificent, actually, for them, keeping Ighalo quite quiet. Ighalo's been very good for Watford this season. But I think people were wondering exactly where the goals would come from for Manchester United on Saturday, given that Martial was out and Rooney was ill. Rooney should be back on Wednesday, but Martial's more touch and go.
Right.
So it was left to Memphis Depay and Jesse Lingard, who everyone expected Depay to play up front through the middle, but they were changing positions so much that I don't think you could really say that either of them was the central striker all the time. At one point it was Lingard, sometimes even Mata was coming inside. The problem was when Herrera went off and they brought on Rojo, they didn't really have anyone, maybe apart from Herrera, to bring off the bench.
Right.
And they lost a little bit of fluency. But there was a lot of speed. And the interesting thing was afterwards Van Gaal saying that he wasn't happy with the positional play, but he was happy to have found a new system which suits the attackers.
Right.
But then he found that the reason that the football that everyone's calling boring disturbs the organisation of the opposition.
This exciting football that they played with this new system that suits the attackers, how is that affected when Wayne Rooney comes back into the picture?
Well, but Lingard had two chances in the second half, which you would have thought that Rooney would have scored, but then you wonder, would Rooney have got into the position? And that is certainly a question that they're going to have to answer at some point in the season.
Does he come back into the team, do you think? Or is this the moment Van Gaal says...
No, I think he will. He's the captain. And he will play, I think.
Did Van Gaal really say afterwards that Cristiano Ronaldo?
He didn't say it. He didn't say it in the press conference. That was elsewhere.
But it's been reported. He has said it.
Yeah.
Why would he come out and say that?
Why does he say a lot of things? Yeah.
But it's strange. Why would you come out and announce that your club is after a? Because Man United do that and they come and start time and time again.
Certainly, Fabregas and others, where they've sort of declared their intentions. I don't know, and it's a. As I think Gary Neville and others have said, I think it would be a strange move for him to, you know, I think there is something in the never go back philosophy. You know, should you be spending that money on Gareth Bale or somebody else instead, rather than necessarily trying to bring back a Ronaldo who may not be as motivated as he was first time around.
And 31, we'll talk more about Ronaldo and Bale and their weekend with Sid Lowe very shortly. An extraordinary performance in the Clasico by Barcelona. The injury list for, anyway, that PSV game: Fellaini, Herrera, Jones, Valencia, Carrick, and I've got here Martial and Rooney, but you think Rooney
was only ill. But the response was outstanding from them for after Watford's equaliser, when a very jet-lagged Marcus Rojo brought down Ighalo. And from there, for the next 5 minutes, they made three chances, had a load of corners, completely pushed Watford back, and it was a little bit like watching the Manchester United
goal. It was a classic Schweinsteiger as well, wasn't it? You know, kind of you know, that's where you see what his signing can bring to them. You know, is that some of that, you know, never say die attitude. What do you think of Depay? I mean, do you think he'll go on to become a United player?
He was good on Saturday in bits and pieces, especially in the first.
The goal was good, wasn't it?
And he had a shot from outside the area, which was just hit wide, and his movement really troubled Watford in the first half. And Van Gaal said he hadn't played for that was his first start for more than a month, and he did fade a little bit towards the end.
It's just weird because his first couple of games, everyone was sort of saying, "Oh, you know, look, fit straight in." And then clearly, since then, he's tailed off, and now it's a crisis of confidence. And then the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, isn't it? You know,
we had that wonderful brace against Bruges.
It's an obvious talent.
Yeah, there.
He's very young.
Right. Okay. Well, there you go. That's a big game for Man United. John, you love quizzes, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, here's a quiz question for you. What connects Hull, Sunderland, West Brom, Maccabi Tel Aviv, Aston Villa and Norwich? Those six sides, Hull, Sunderland, West Brom, Maccabi Tel Aviv, Aston Villa and Norwich.
Ooh, I know.
Jacob knows.
And the words in the last 8 months. Owen, any thoughts? It is something to do with Chelsea. They're the only teams that Diego Costa scored against in the last 8 months. Hull, Sunderland, West Brom, Maccabi Tel Aviv, Villa and Norwich. Ow. It was a better stat, to be fair, before he scored against Norwich. But I think it's still pretty exciting. How excited were you by Chelsea's big comeback win this weekend?
Well, I mean, it tells you something of where Chelsea are, that a 1-0 victory, home victory over Norwich, a fairly laboured 1-0 home victory, for all that were some signs of life, is seen as, you know, great progress. But, you know, clearly, given where they are, it was one they needed to win. And I think the good news from Mourinho is that Hazard looks like he's firing again.
Yeah.
Matic played a lot better. I mean, Matic was so important to them last season. For some reason, he's been one of these four or five players who've just gone completely off the boil at the beginning of this. So some signs of life there. I mean, obviously, some of the same worries remain, chiefly where the goals are going to come from. And Costa still looks like he's doing an impression of a centre-forward rather than being the man who terrorised defences in the first half of last season. But, you know, maybe this goal will spark something. I mean, clearly, I think what almost happened is they'd stopped looking for him, which must happen, you know, sort of consciously or subconsciously. The players had just stopped looking for him. And it seemed to me that in the second half, they were looking for him again. He was kind of, you know, he was showing for the ball, and that goal's only got to help him. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of clearly, you wonder whether Mourinho's patience will last beyond January and certainly the next transfer window. They've got to look at bringing another striker, haven't they?
Yeah, well, in the short term of future, they've got Spurs this weekend. Is that home or away, Jacob?
Away.
At White Hart Lane.
Why they lost.
Got absolutely hammered.
5-3?
The start of Harry Kane.
Wow.
Yeah. But they did this against Villa. They beat them 2-0 before a difficult period at home, and they've beaten another middling side at home in a fairly laboured victory. So you wonder whether they're really out of the woods. It's only 2 weeks ago since they lost to Stoke. And, 3 weeks since they lost to Liverpool. So, yeah, I mean, it could easily all come flooding back on Sunday.
Right. Or indeed midweek when they travel to the Bloomfield Stadium to take on Maccabi Tel Aviv. Potential banana skin for a Chelsea side who are not yet certain of qualification because Porto are leading their group. 10 points, on 10 points. Chelsea 3 points behind them, with Dinamo Kiev only 2 points further back.
Although the Champions League has seemed to provide a bit of an element of relief for them this season. I mean, their performance have been pretty good in the Champions League sometimes. And, you know, I'd expect them to win that, but who knows this season?
Right, their final group game is Porto at home. Of course, they lost away to the Portuguese side. Other Euro stuff? Malmo taking on PSG, John. That's an exciting game. Mentioned them being 13 points clear. They're behind Real Madrid. They're on 7 points. Real Madrid are 10 points in that group. Shakhtar and Malmo, I mean, basically they're both through. Shakhtar and Malmo are both on 3 points. But this is Zlatan's homecoming. And I don't know if you've seen this. He's rented Malmo Town Square and will pay for, catering and fun and games and a big screen for everyone to watch him playing. It's a very public-spirited gesture, this.
It's not the sort of thing you can imagine Zlatan Ibrahimovic doing.
It is, it's out of character, but all the more appreciable for that.
Absolutely.
Magnus Lind says, I think that we should put some context to Zlatan's comment last week about retiring Denmark in the Euro qualifier playoff things. This was actually in response to a Danish paper printing a picture of an old Zlatan in a wheelchair with the headline, "Tonight we're retiring Zlatan." So he basically was just giving as good as he got. Fair enough.
Fair enough too, I say. Yeah.
Shakhtar will be taking on Real. And, well, it's a Real Madrid team reeling and beset by rifts internally, apparently, after that 4-0 defeat at home to Barcelona. Let's talk about that next, with the man who was there, Sid Lowe. Are you there?
Hello, James.
Hi.
I'm here, James. How are you?
Hi, very well. Is Estella with you today?
She is.
Great.
Well, she's not sitting right next to me. She tends to sit right next to me, but she's in one of the other rooms, I think, somewhere.
Excellent.
Hidden away. Let's hope no one comes to the door.
Indeed so. Indeed. Although that was quite fun. Listen, you...
They've already been, actually. The postie's already been this morning with his now normal turn-up with a packet of books and stuff.
Right. In other news, Sid, on Saturday evening, you went to the Bernabeu.
Yeah.
For a piece of history.
Yeah, and it really was. Although, I mean, I suppose in a way it sort of wasn't. Except that everything's history, isn't it? That's what history is. It's stuff
right.
that happened.
But back to the game, Sid.
It was another. I mean, bear in mind that in the last 10 years, Barcelona have been to the Bernabeu and beaten Real Madrid 3-1, beaten them 4-3, beaten them 6-2. They beat them 5-0, of course, at the Camp Nou, and this time they went and beat them 4-0. It's difficult to know where to start because there's so many images throughout the game that kind of sum this up. I'm almost tempted to start at the very start, Jimbo.
All
okay?
right.
So Barcelona take the centre. The ball goes back to Busquets, and he does this lovely drag back that makes Bale look ridiculous. And the game is 4 seconds old.
Right.
And that's kind of where it all starts.
All right. The top knot was already doing that, to be fair. But as you say, an early start for Barcelona that was dream football. That bit when they just pass the ball around between themselves for about 2 minutes, and then, bang, there's your opening goal.
Yeah, it's been described, I think a little bit sneakily, it's been described as a 37-pass move. But actually, there is a ball into the box which is headed away by Ramos in the middle of that. So there's one Real Madrid touch, and then they get possession back and carry on. So actually, it's a 24-pass move, which is still obviously not too bad.
Mm.
And of course, the thing that breaks it is that kind of moment surge of acceleration from Sergio Roberto that no one really quite responds to. Ramos comes miles out of the defence to try and meet him, and Ramos was bizarrely out of place all game. And I know some people say that's not bizarre, it happens a lot, but I was really struck by it this weekend. And Sergio Roberto dropped it off for Suarez to score. That's 10 minutes, I think, into the game. And you kind of felt, oh, okie doke.
Hmm.
Because Madrid... Again, I mean, it's difficult, Jimbo, because there's so many different things we could pick up on. But Madrid were dreadful, but Barcelona were genuinely brilliant as well.
All right, and this was without Messi in the starting lineup. What was it, 3-0 or 4-0 before he came on?
He came on at 3-0, 56 minutes,
right.
And came on. And I quite like this statistic, which is, again, one of those many, many things you can pick out as kind of a demonstration of what this game was. In the 33 minutes he was on the pitch, he had more contact with the ball than any of Madrid's attacking players in the entire game.
Wow.
So more than Bale, more than Benzema, more than James, more than Cristiano Ronaldo, more than Isco when he came onto the pitch, whose most significant contact, of course, was to boot Neymar up in the air.
Yeah. Listen, Sid, there are a lot of things we could say about Real Madrid. There were the hankies, the panelada, there were the boos and whistles.
By the way, I love the hankies, Jimbo.
Yep.
Sorry to interrupt you again. But I love the hankies because, of course, these days, very few people actually carry hankies. So the traditional complaint is to wave hankies around. So what they were doing was waving around pieces of white paper. Real Madrid had quite literally armed the masses and then stood there to be shot at because these pieces of white paper were, of course, the white paper from the mosaic that had been set up pre-game.
Brilliant. Okay. Did they also give the people whistles that they could use to express
their discontent?
And then did they also turn up the stadium PA to try and drown out the sounds of discontent?
They certainly did do that. I must confess, I'm very slightly unsure as to how deliberate that was, because the truth is that the full-time whistle, they always put the club's anthem on ridiculously loud. But yeah, it did feel a lot louder than normal to me.
All right. Now, I see one of the Spanish papers is saying the people want heads to roll this morning. There was Florentino out graffiti at the Bernabeu, I presume,
yeah,
post-game.
And chance of it. I mean, that's the main thing. And it was significant numbers of people as well. That kind of cranking and whirring noise you can hear is the propaganda machines now kind of getting back into action to try and shift the focus of attention away. And the most comic of all of them is the headline on the front of La Razón sports section today, which basically has the headline Retratados, which is, for those who know the guy who's behind La Raison's sports pages, it's not a surprise that that's what he's used. What it basically means is, you know, shown up. And of course, it's a picture of the 11 players.
Right.
They're, you know, these are the guys who've revealed themselves, a portrait has been done of them. And of course, the person who reveals himself time and time and time again is the person who's behind La Raison's sports section, who is very much in the pocket of the president.
Right, okay. So he'll probably ride this storm out. What are the chances of Rafa Benitez getting away with this one? A couple of things I wanted to ask you about. One, rumblings of discontent within the dressing room with Sergio Ramos making comments about being closer to Ancelotti than they are to Benitez, and rumours of Ronaldo saying either he goes or I go, and a lot of question marks about his, what you described as a 4-0-6 formation for this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, I don't want to sort of bore you with the kind of tactical side of it, but I think you look at the formation, and I think it felt very much like it almost felt like Rafa was kind of saying, oh, you want all the stars in the team, do you? Here you go. This is what happens. You know, this is what you wanted. This is what happens. But also, even within that, you can play that formation if the players produce the right kind of movements, if they work, and they just didn't. If you have a what was theoretically 4-2-3-1, and the three in front of the two are somewhere near the two, and they can be joined up, then fine. But the gap between the two, who are effectively part of the back four, and the three and the one, who were right up at the top of the pitch, was absolutely gigantic. And for me, the image of the game almost is that second goal where it looks like an individual mistake from Modric, who's robbed, but it's not, in so much as he's coming out with the ball, looking up and thinking, oh, bloody hell, they're all about 400 miles away. And he's got nobody to hit, and he gets run down by Suarez, which is obviously one of the many things that Suarez does really, really well, and loses the ball and so on. But I think with Benitez, in Benitez's defence, I think he's got players that wouldn't naturally be the kind of players he wants. I felt that it seemed to me like he was kind of sending a message, or at least putting out a team that he could effectively say, well, you know, these are the players that the fans, the media, the president are saying should play, and they just weren't good enough. The players didn't respond to him. And I think he's in a difficult position. As you said, that whole thing about Ancelotti as well, he inherited a team that was annoyed at Ancelotti being sacked. And Rafa Benitez, in that case, he's the stepmother. You know, he's a stepmother who takes over these kids who like the other one. They don't like this one. And they don't want to be with him no matter what he does. But he also, I think, hasn't always handled it brilliantly. I mean, we know that Rafa is a coach who's extremely well prepared tactically, works extremely hard, but isn't always that good at relating to some of his players. And all the more so when it's players like these who kind of almost don't want to relate.
All right. And Ancelotti saying, why not? Is that right? I saw a quote from him saying, would you go back to Real Madrid? And he raised an eyebrow and said, why not?
I don't think Ancelotti does raise his eyebrows, does he? Not? They're just already there.
They're there, tattooed but on, midway up the... Yeah.
It's absolutely... Well, it's always one of them. It's brilliant. It's like the old Roger Moore spitting image puppet, the windscreen wiper eyebrows.
Sid, any likely...
One thing, Jimbo, that comment that was the Ronaldo comment, him or me, I'm quite dubious about that one, I must admit. It was picked up, I think, off a TV channel, then from Gazeta, which then turned up here in El Mundo Deportivo, which then kind of got rebounded back again via a few papers. And there is a reason why that comment isn't in The Guardian, and it's because we're not convinced it's true. Some people just write anything, of course.
It's no smoke without fire, Sid. That's my line. Listen, what are the likely repercussions of this game for Real Madrid's clash? Are they away at Shakhtar?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but that's, I think, apart from the trip that Atletico Madrid did a couple of weeks ago, that's got to be one of the longest trips in the Champions League. That flight's not going to be much fun, is it?
No, indeed not.
Now, and then after that, they go to Eibar, which in theory is quite difficult. I think the reality as well with Madrid is, you look back over this season so far, and Rafa has said a lot, look at the statistics. The statistics are brilliant. The numbers are brilliant. And they're not brilliant at all. This is the worst they've been after 12 weeks of the season for a decade. They scored loads of goals against Betis and Espanyol, but apart from that, haven't scored loads of goals. Their performances have been largely pretty abysmal. So I think the kind of the unravelling, if you like, of Rafa's message has been quite startling.
Sid Lowe in Spain. We'll be catching up with him again soon, hopefully with a little bit of dog action last time, because I know everybody enjoyed that. Some barking and woofing there in the background. Barcelona, meantime, looking in scary form. They host Roma in Group E, which is quite a tight group as well. Barcelona are clear there on 10 points. Roma in second place on 5. Bayer Leverkusen only a point behind them on 4. They travel to Bati Borisov of Roma. They were held, as I said, 2-2 by Bologna, who've had an amazing turnaround since Donadoni took them over. And it's been a change of lead again in Serie A as a result. First of all, Napoli went top. They're on an incredible unbeaten run. 16 games, I think that's the longest in Europe. Fiorentina drew in the Tuscan derby with Empoli, which meant that with Roma drawing, Inter have now moved into first place. And for the first time this season, they scored more than one goal at home as they beat Frosinone from the relegation zone 4-0. But the big game, of course, this weekend was Juventus's 1-0 win over Milan. We mentioned it before. The key thing about this game, though, John Ashdown, the two goalkeepers. Gigi Buffon, in the week that he celebrated the 20th anniversary of his debut in Serie A, when he held Milan to a 0-0 draw for Parma, this time with a clean sheet against Milan. Milan's keeper was 4 years away from being even born that day when Gigi Buffon first went into the nets for Parma.
Oh, this is the young guy with the...
Gigi Donnarumma.
Yeah, the tremendous name.
Mm. And he had a good game as well. I mean, he let one goal in, but and it was a brilliant goal by Paulo Dybala.
Yeah, and Buffon made a great save in the 93rd or 2nd minute to deny Milan an equaliser.
Still got it, Gigi. And they're creeping up. They're 9 points off the top, 7 off the top 3. So, you know, we're still in November. Mm. Tim Stappard says, you never mentioned Portuguese football. Sporting Benfica was this weekend. Plus, Benfica are taking their ex-manager to court for €14 million. Well, it's true, Tim Stappard. And it ended with Sporting's third. This was their third clash with Benfica this season and their third win. And the exciting thing is that, of course, Benfica's manager, Jorge Jesus, is now the Sporting boss and they're suing him for €14 million because they say that he effectively started work for their rivals before he left their employ. He says, basically, you locked me out the training ground. So what was I supposed to do? This one's set to run and run. Gordon Dundee says, Jimbo, you gave the Uruguay-Chile World Cup qualifier score as 3-1 when it was 3-0. On Monday, you gave Chile a 1-0 win against Colombia when it was 1-1. Come on, JR. It's only reading out scores. Also, Uruguay's win makes them current unofficial football world champions. Worthy of a mention. Certainly is. Also worthy of a mention, the great quote from Jorge Sampaoli, the Chile coach, after his team lost to Uruguay. They'd had 73% of possession. He said, one night I went to a bar, I was with a woman, we talked all night, we laughed, we flirted. I paid for several drinks of hers. Around 5 a.m. though, a guy came in, grabbed her by the arm and took her to the bathroom. He made love to her and she left with him. That doesn't matter because I had most of the possession on the night. Brilliant.
Don't get that from Roy Hodgson, do you?
No. But you did get that one about space monkeys. Do you remember that?
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Still to come on this Football Weekly, we've got Championship Minute, which might not actually be a minute. You can have a bit longer if you want, John. And or less. Could be less. And we've also got some other games from the weekend in the Premier League that we haven't talked about. What's up first, Jacob?
Up to you, really.
I'm going to go with John.
Okay.
Let's hear about the Championship.
Let's get it done.
Paul Lambert, how did he get on in his debut for Blackburn Rovers?
Yeah, they had a 2-1 away win at Preston. So a winning start for him. Yeah, he gave one of the saddest quotes of the weekend. Well, I found it quite sort of sad.
Oh.
So he's had sort of 9 months out of the game where he's been... he's had this new diet and this new sort of cycling regime.
And we were saying how much better he's looking.
Getting himself into shape. And he said after the match, for the first time in 40 years, I was enjoying my life, but now I'm back in football. Now,
I was looking for a job and then I found a job.
But he's 46. So from the ages of... sort of 1 to 6, it sounds like he was absolutely fine,
right,
enjoying life. Then he hit 7 and it all just went horribly wrong.
Was that not your experience?
I just have this picture of a poor little 7-year-old Paul Lambert sort of wandering around the playground, sadly.
Right.
Kicking a tennis ball against a wall on his own. But now he's back in football, so he's...
Well, yeah, but wasn't he saying that he was really enjoying himself when he was not in football?
Yeah, he should have stayed away.
And now Blackburn have come and stuffed it up for him. What about Steve Clarke, who's beset by suitors?
Yeah, that was a weird story last week. So he went off, he's the Reading manager, who went off to talk to Fulham about their vacancy.
Yes. And then he said that Reading fans shouldn't get upset about him doing that.
Well, yeah, and he was sort of saying that it was only professional of him to do so because Fulham were prepared to pay this huge compensation fee that was required to get him out of Reading. So he was
so
kind of just...
selfless reasons,
absolutely,
basically.
Absolutely, yeah. He was only doing the right thing and went and talked to them and seemed to be set to leave and then had a U-turn at the last minute. And so, yeah, he had a bit of a frosty...
He did or they did?
No, he did.
All right.
But was there not something about his various demands his agent was making?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It depends.
As who you believe.
Who you believe usual. A little bit, yeah. He was saying that it was nothing to do with money, it was about ambition and that Reading were more mind-blowing than Fulham were.
Hmm.
I don't know if you can be more mind-blowing. If something's mind-blowing, it's mind-blowing. But, yeah, he came back and he had a bit of a frosty reception for their home game against Bolton, but they won 2-1. So,
all right. Bolton, they're in some trouble.
Yeah, they're rock bottom, one win all season.
Right, £172 million in debt.
Yes, that's kind of awkward. They had to cancel two loan deals over the international break because the money's not there and they're up for sale and there won't be any more money for any signings until the club's sold.
What? I mean, presumably anybody who's remotely interested in buying that club is going to wait for it to go bankrupt, aren't they? Well, why would you take on £172 million worth of debt for a club?
Well, I think I'm right in saying that the debt's all owed to Eddie Davies.
Is it?
Kind of the Isle of Man magnate.
Oh, okay.
Garside's right. Like the front man.
Oh, okay, all right.
So essentially the debt isn't dangerous debt that's going to get called in and Davies isn't going to pull the
but
plug.
But he's not going to write it off, I imagine.
No, absolutely not. But there's apparently two or three consortiums interested in taking over there, one of which is fronted by former Bolton player Stelios Giannakopoulos.
Really? Interesting.
They'd have to do some sort of deal, wouldn't they, whereby they'd have to take a hit on some of their debts. So, but they'd do that presumably to get rid of the club, basically. Yeah, yeah. But yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Bolton was always a club that kind of, operated on... It's a classic case of a club operating on Premier League revenues, and then when that suddenly disappears, you kind of... The debts soon spiral.
Mm. All right. QPR. That's another one. Indeed. Where Neil Warnock... wasn't there for their away defeat at Borough.
Yeah, slightly. I don't know what the actual personal reasons were the official...
Well, there were rumours that maybe there'd been a personal difference with Sir Les Ferdinand.
Mm.
But yeah, the official story is personal reasons, and, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be like Neil Warnock to fall out with anybody either, so it's kind of, he's usually very... Well, actually, the man who did take charge of QPR on Friday night was Kevin Blackwell, who worked with Warnock at Sheffield United.
Mm.
And they had a huge falling out there when Blackwell went to take the Leeds job and basically said they'd never speak to each other again, having been sort of firm friends for 10 years. Now back in harness at QPR, where they lost 1-0, but apparently played pretty well, I'd have to say. I didn't see the game.
All right. Now, back up top in the Premier League, Everton have now scored 10 goals in the last two games. What on earth's going on there?
They're brilliant going forward sometimes, especially when they play Sunderland and Aston Villa at home, to be fair, in the space two home games.
Yeah,
that does help.
That'll
a
help.
Little bit. But some of the, the fourth goal, the pass from Barkley, just the instant snap pass, the vision to play it through first time to Lukaku, who I think the finish was first time. He's scoring loads now.
Mm. It's really exciting how Barkley's playing, because again he's gone through that period, hasn't he, of being the sort of flavour of the month and the next bright thing off the rank, and then he's had his sort of dip, if you like, and now he seems to be back playing consistently well every week without having to have that sort of suffocating spotlight on him all the time. And I think he's thriving, and every time you see Lukaku you can't help but sort of think, look at Chelsea and think, was that the wisest decision, because he looks like he's growing into a fantastic centre forward who's pretty much got it all, because he's really starting to bring other players into the game a lot more as well.
Right, he scored his 50th Premier League goal. He's the fifth man to do it before the age of 23. You may have seen this stat. The others being Michael Owen, Robbie Fowler, Wayne Rooney, and Cristiano Ronaldo. Nothing really came of those players.
De La Feu as well was superb. Poor Kieran Richardson, won't want to see him again anytime soon. The way he's playing, they would hope that Barcelona would activate the buyout clause for £6 million.
Everyone keep quiet about that buyout clause.
Yeah.
Nothing to see here, Barcelona. Let's move on.
Aston Villa were terrible as well.
Mm.
Really bad.
Yeah, that Jordan Amavi, his absence, and Kieran Richardson coming in, that's a big this-way sign to the opposition, is it?
Mm.
Mm. Oh, dear. Swansea against Bournemouth. A lot of people talking about this game as being potentially a decisive one for Gary Monk's future. And, of course, Bournemouth in all sorts of trouble. They played really well, took a 2-0 lead.
Indeed.
Away at the Liberty Stadium.
But it's the sort of game, you know, if you are Bournemouth and you are down there, it's the sort of game you've really got to win if you're 2-0 up at the Liberty Stadium. I mean, they you know, they were unlucky with the penalty at the end, which clearly wasn't a penalty, but it's as the cliche goes, it's the sort of game they've got to win. These rumours are gathering pace again around Gary Monk. It's just a weird situation, isn't it? You know,
well, an interesting team selection, a lot of people picking up on, where he left Sigurdsson, Gomez, Montero, Cork and Fernandes all on the bench.
Yeah. And clearly he's feeling the pressure, isn't he? You know, he keeps lashing out at the media and at whoever's stoking these rumours, when the rumours seem to be coming from his own board, who keep holding crisis meetings to discuss his future. So, I mean, you wonder how long that situation could persist. Either they've got to start, you know, they're going to start winning games and climbing the table, or it's going to come to a head.
Well, indeed. Speaking of stoking, though, Owen, Potter's beating Saints.
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite a result, isn't it? Down at St Mary's.
Stoke are a good side.
Are Saints.
They're both good sides who've done well in the transfer market. Will be fine all season. Could even possibly push for a European place. Both of them. Stoke aren't far off now. They always seem to start a season slowly under Mark Hughes. A few players come in and it takes a while to settle, but around October they start to get everything into gear. I mean, at the start of October, I think they're in the just above the relegation zone, and then they beat Villa, moved away from it, and now they're winning. And they've got Bojan back from his injury. He's been back for a month or so. Got the goal, scored the winner.
And Shaqiri, after a very sort of difficult start, is just starting to show that he might be able to fit into that team. But again, you know, you look at Stoke and you look at Swansea. It would only take a couple of wins for Swansea to turn the corner, and that's why the Monk situation is a bit ridiculous. If you know, it does seem to be a fairly an outbreak of short-termism at a club which has been sort of renowned for being fairly sensible.
That's true. From Stoke's point of view, though, they're down in the bottom half still in 11th, but they're only 2 points behind West Ham in 6th.
This is their seventh season in the Premier League, and they've never finished higher than 9th and never finished lower than 14th. And Hughes does seem to think this season is a chance for them to push on and get to those European places. Although you do wonder, you know, you end up in the Europa League in a club that size, can it cope with Thursday nights and all that sort of stuff?
Well, the good thing is they're used to playing it.
They've done it before, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
They were fine.
Let's talk about, Owen, FIFA.
Oh, yes.
And all that kind of thing. Have you been off to Zurich recently?
When was I last in Zurich? Probably a couple of weeks ago. I'm going again beginning of next month, yes, for the latest executive committee meeting.
Exco!
Indeed, yeah.
Right.
Love an Exco.
Okay. They booked the volcano for the start of next month, have they?
Super.
Since we last spoke on this topic, what has happened? Well, Sepp Blatter had his breakdown, it's been described as?
Sepp Blatter's had what's variously been described as a nervous breakdown or a physical breakdown. He was hospitalised for a few days, basically. Seems to be fine now, according to his ever-quotable spokesman, Klaus Stalker, who comes out with some fantastic gems. Yes, indeed. And Platini, and so there's two processes going on, basically. One is the sort of the inside baseball FIFA ethics committee process by which Blatter and Platini have both been charged. The evidence has now been passed to the adjudicatory arm of the ethics committee, who will now decide how long they should be banned for. They'll both get a sort of court-style hearing in which they'll plead their case, and then a sort of a sanction will be handed down. Meanwhile, sort of in the real world, everyone's wondering whether the cast of fairly motley crew of characters who've presented themselves to be the next FIFA president in February is in any way sort of fit for purpose, and whether this is the way we should be going, given that the organisation is just about, you know, kind of collapsed under the weight of its own corruption, whether we should be letting the same guys just circle around and pick the next man off the rank.
Are there any other options within a million miles of the table at this point?
Not really, no. I mean, if you look at those that have gone forward to that election, it's basically Sheikh Salman, who's a Bahraini sheikh.
But if none of them are fit for purpose, what other options are there, apart from, say, boycotting FIFA and just starting afresh?
Well, that's basically... The options that have always been there, which is that somehow you get enough pressure from the... from certain members of FIFA, i.e. kind of the Europeans and the South Americans, to kind of... enough will for change. I've always argued that will never happen, partly because they've got their own fish to fry. Look at the Germans with their problems with their World Cup bid. Look at the fact that, you know, Spain with Angel Maria Villalona, for example, have got no real will to change the system. Look at some of the South American countries and whether they really want to change and so on. So it's not going to come from inside FIFA. It would only ever come from outside. And that's why I think, you know, kind of... national governments and international bodies have kind of, you know, have waxed and waned a little bit. When you get a big outpouring like May, when, you know, the FBI marched in and arrested a load of them, and Blatter says he's going to finally quit and so on, you get a lot of noise from the international community saying we must put something in place that is fit for purpose, that all dies away, and right. football kind of... the football insiders kind of regenerate, and what we'll end up with, the danger is that what we'll end up with in 6 months' time will be quite similar to what we had before, and then we'll all be back here in 10 years or so, you know.
Right. Although there might be a kind of cumulative effect of so many scandals, but scandals indeed, possibly from even outside football. For example, the IAAF issue with Russia's athletics programme, and to what extent that might complicate any possible repercussions on World Cups there and that kind of thing?
Well, they're trying very, both Russia and FIFA are trying very hard to sort of put some distance between what's happened with the IAAF and the 2018 World Cup.
Which necessarily involves the Ministry of Sport in
Absolutely.
Russia.
And obviously, you know, you've got a Ministry of Sport that's just been accused of being involved in a systemic doping operation and cover-up. So clearly they are linked. I don't think it will have any effect on whether they stage the World Cup in Russia or not. Whether it should or not is another matter. Mm. What it probably will mean is that they might have to have a different arrangement for their anti-doping operation. They might have to fly samples outside the country or whatever. But no, clearly I think it probably should go further than that. But there's no will to reopen that among the FIFA hierarchy.
Right, okay. So no other big news in terms of things happening FIFA-wise?
Well, I think, you know, clearly the big news will be if Platini is definitively ruled out of this presidential race, which could well happen within the coming days or weeks. And that will be, you know, the fall of Michel Platini is a sort of fascinating story. And again, if Blatter is banned from all football, it's kind of confirmation of what we already knew, which is that he's on the way out. But again, that will be the sort of full stop to a quite extraordinary tale. And meanwhile, I think, you know, the English FA, the German FA, who, as I say, have got their problems with this 2006 World Cup bid, but they've got to kind of, you know, instead of just falling back into who's best for us, you know, kind of which horse should we back, they should be still asking those sort of fundamental questions about what FIFA should look like. Unfortunately, there's no sign really that they're doing so.
All right. Okay. Well, I look forward to catching up with you again on this topic when and if those developments happen. In the meantime, that brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly. Looking forward to all that midweek action. We'll be back, of course, on Thursday, looking at all those games and forward to the weekend. But for now, it's many thanks to Jacob Steinberg.
Thank you.
To Owen Gibson.
Very welcome.
And to John Ashdown.
Top.
And to producer Ben. And you, listener, have a great week. We'll see you Thursday.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.